remember, you're free now. But never let them remember they've rejected the demands of God who says this is right. That they have rather chosen to do whatever they wanted to do. When the chains are forged by sin, drag them crushing down into the ready and welcoming hands, they'll discover their freedom was a fantasy all along. A golden balloon that popped, and all they have left is the little ring through which they blew their breath. I hope, young friends and demons in training, that you'll learn these pointers well. Write them in the front of your sales manual, paste them on your mirror, and better still, memorize them. Get them in your head, then they'll come out your mouth. Keep a man's mind on law as a stone about his neck, so heavy that the weight of the law crushes him. Keep him thinking that he's held down. Many men will reject the law, and the righteous law expresses both the word and the deed, both the faith and the work. That's the most completely sold and the best customer we have. Our best source of advertising, too. Don't despair. You don't have to convince him to repent of both or reject both. It's always been company policy. The price of two for the price of one. I don't care how much faith he's got. If he had faith that could say to yonder mountain, be removed and cast into the sea, if he won't say it, if he won't do it, he's mine. And neither do I care if he can do many great things. If God didn't tell him to do it, he's mine. Oh, I have lots of customers in the church. They have great faith. They can tell about it. They can tell it in great words. But their works deny their faith. I have some other customers who are so proud of their works that they can't tell you how to be saved. They're both mine. The basic kit rejects the word. He gets the attachment free, the rejection of righteousness. But if he wants only the good works package, without the good word package, he can't use either one of them, and we fooled him. And he's going right where we're going. Don't leave a stone unturned in fully persuading him to have his reaction instead toward freedom, liberation, being his own man. Always link the word freedom with freedom from. And he's got you. He's ours. Add him to your list. Freedom from. Fantasy freedom. Our best tool. Our most successful advertising campaign. Our time is up. Thank you very much for your attention this morning. This afternoon, the title of our lesson is The Devil Goes to Church. This series of statements and replies are something that you might hear in any congregation of the Lord's church. And once in a while, I'll tell you what the devil thinks of it. of those kinds of statements. This is brother number A. These are some of the things that people believe are ways in which the devil works on us. And brother number A says we seem to think God is or has to be reasonable to us. God made man reasonable. Consequently, everything about religion should be reasonable and logical. But reasonable only deals with human knowledge, man's limitations, his capacities, and so on. Now let's take, for example, the story of Naaman. There is no logical reason why water cured Naaman of his leprosy. I took a bath and it didn't cure me of my pleurisy. I dipped 7 times and it didn't cure me of my pleurisy. Naaman dipped 7 times and came up pure and clean. That is not logical. It isn't reasonable. Does it make any sense? It doesn't unless you take into account that God had his reason for having him do it. And he hasn't told us his reason yet, has he? Number two, Sister A says the devil tempted Eve by drawing her attention to the forbidden fruit, and when she saw it was pleasant to the eyes, good for food, and desirable to make one wise, he dangles temptations in front of us and asks, doesn't that look good? Wouldn't you like to have that for your own? Not only tempts us with things of the world, but things we don't have, things we can't afford, things we don't need. He tempts us in another way. Discontentment with what he has, what we have. What we have apparently is all that we need, isn't it? Or all that God thinks that we need. But the devil likes to tell me, why can't you have what so-and-so has? Why can't you have something else? Why can't you have more? The brother says, how does the devil go about that? The sister replies with catalogs of things you like. You become obsessed with wanting to possess them. He wants you to look at what you could have right now, not later. Someone talked about someone wanted to go to school to learn a certain trade, but it took 4 years, and that was too long. If it's too long, you don't want it badly enough, do you? But we want it right now. That's the devil in us, isn't it? Brother B says, you know, envying others is involved in this too. I remember Joseph's brothers were envious of his dreams and his favored position. But rather than deal with their own envy and their jealousy, they took revenge on their brother and sold him into Egypt and hoped they'd never see him again, didn't they? They got even. Romans 12 and 19 says, vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord. You know, Joseph could have hated their guts, couldn't he, very easily. They treated him shamefully. But Joseph rather saw God bringing about the salvation of their very brothers who did him wrong by his slavery. And he accepted it without any feeling of revenge. Wouldn't that be wonderful? When somebody slaps you and you say, God bless you, I needed that. You surely were doing it for my benefit. Surely God had something in mind, or you treating me the way you did. Sister B says, this is a hard problem for me, too, not to strike back at somebody when they strike me. I think I'd feel better if I could just knock them flat. Any of you feel that way? When somebody strikes you, do you feel better if you could just haul off and just knock them flat? Somebody told me about that when they were kids, they used to knock each other flat to see how it felt when they came back. Was that you, Lewis? Now we know what made him that way, don't we? Well, this sister says, I'd like to just knock him flat. And the devil says she'd play right into my hands if she did. I try so hard to be good and not do that. And it's frustrating. I go home and I have a headache the whole night. I'm upset in my stomach. I'm beside myself, because if I had hit him, it'd be over with. But I control it, keep it all inside, and I'm frustrated. When you think of all the things you could do to get even. Oh, I love that person. When he starts thinking of all the things he can do to get even, he's getting closer to my hand. He's my kind of man. I'm right there at his elbow, urging him, frustrating him. Then her conscience, that still small voice of the enemy is always talking about, condemns her not only for conscience, that's bad enough, or vengeance, but now she's frustrated over being obedient. You ever feel that way? Oh, I didn't lip off, but I still wish I had it. Now I'm guilty of obedience. And the devil says, good, 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 good. What a nightmare I've got her in. Just where I want her. Sister C says, I'm afraid to tell others about Christ. I'm afraid I'll hurt their feelings. I don't want anybody to be mad at me. Why do I feel that way?
I know why. I make her feel that way.
You mustn't hurt anybody's feelings. Do you have to hurt people's feelings to tell them about Christ? Is that a suggestion of the devil? Don't we just love that? She's afraid to do what her master told her for fear she'll lose a friend. Wonder what her friend Jesus thinks about that. Trading him off for another friend. Oh, I love that. When you take your friend in preference to Jesus, you're right down my alley. I like you for that. Sell him for 30 pieces of silver. That's what I like. As long as I can keep her in the bondage of fear, which the archenemy Paul said was real Christians hadn't received again, the bondage of fear. Long as I can keep her afraid, she's never going to convert anybody. He's in my camp. She apparently hasn't studied Hebrews 13, 5, and 6, where the master, and he should know what he's talking about, I'll never leave thee nor forsake thee, so that we may boldly say, the Lord is my helper, and I will not fear what men shall do to me. I don't think I have ever been afraid of a person that I talked to. Afraid of being physically harmed. But every time I go to study a lesson with a person that's a particularly touchy lesson that's going to get right down in their craw, I warn them before we ever start the lesson, now you and I may part company over this lesson. This lesson is very pointed. It's very personal. I know the situation. I know what you're in. But we're going to talk about it because we need to talk about it.
I hope that we won't lose our friendship over this lesson. But if worse comes to worse, I have no choice but to choose the master over you. I can't say it any plainer than that. I think that's being honest with the person. I think it's being helpful to them to know that I know this is a ticklish situation. I know I'm putting our friendship on the line, but our friendship does not mean as much as my friendship with Jesus. And I am willing to risk my friendship with them to tell them the truth. Until I reach that point, I am a captive of fear, aren't I? And the devil wants me to be afraid. He doesn't want the story told. Brother D, why do we fear talking to someone about Christ when we're not afraid to talk to them about other things just as delicate? Brother E, fewer and fewer are willing to take the risk. Consequently, less and less is being accomplished. For where there's no risk, there's little or no progress. Oh, I don't like people who take risks for God. People who take risks for God don't really take a risk. But if I can get them to believe they're taking a risk, they're in my camp, aren't they? They're on my side. How many of you have thought about talking to your dearest friend about his soul, but you're afraid to take the risk? You want to show your hands? You want to be brave and show your hands? How many of you have chickened out? Let's see your hands. Confession is good for the soul and hard on the reputation, isn't it? We've all chickened out. Not long ago, I walked right past the casket of a man that I chickened out on. I'll never have a chance to know whether our friendship could have stood the story of Jesus or not, because I didn't tell him. But I'll have the rest of my life to think about it. And the devil wants me to think about it. I pray to God that he'll forgive me. And if I pray in faith, he will forgive me if I don't do it again. But if I go out tomorrow and do the same thing, I imagine God just kind of laughs and says, "Well, Marvin, you didn't really mean it, did you? You were just kidding." Oh, I hate it when a man has enough trust in our enemy that he's willing to risk his neck. If he actually knew how he works, he'd know there's no risk involved because he's promised. And different from us, God can deliver, that no good thing will he withhold from them that walk uprightly. All things work together for good to them that love the Lord, to them who are the called according to his purpose. Sister D, very little we do is not in some way motivated by personal interests or gain. Why did you come here today? Did you hope to gain something? How many came to give something? We assume all the teachers did, but did all the students come to give something? That's why I love the discussion groups. Everybody should have come to give something. If you didn't, you missed the purpose of the meeting. But this lady says, very little we do is not in some way motivated by personal interests or gain. I'm sure the devil uses this self-centeredness to create situations. If I can take myself out of the realm of thinking about my own selfish interests, things can go smoothly for me and for others. How often do you look out for number one? That's you. at the expense of number two, that's me, or at the expense of number three, your sister, or expense of number four, your brother. You're really looking out for number one. Sometimes Satan plays a trick on us and turns the situation around by distortion and perversion. But it all comes back to be centered on myself. I didn't get a thing out of the service this morning. Well, was the service for you? Is your name up over the door? Was the singing for you? Was the lesson for you? Or was the whole thing supposed to be for God and I forgot? I thought it was for me. I'm complaining because it didn't satisfy me. Did it satisfy God? That's a question I ought to ask, isn't it? Worry. The biggest and worst things we have to deal with, isn't it? Worry. You know, I didn't know that she knew that that was the hottest selling item in our store. Worry? Staying away, being anxious, and staying away from the only source that we have for curing it. Be anxious for what? But by... Will you repeat that a little louder? Be not anxious. Be anxious for nothing, but in how many things? Everything, by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving. What's the thanksgiving for? What's that got to do with it? I'm not thankful. I'm in a crack. Thankful it's not worse. Thankful he answered my prayer before. Thankful of what's gone on before. Thankful he's listening. With thanksgiving let your request be made known unto God. The one to worry about, one we worry about most is me. Is that right? If we could but have more faith and not be so concerned about tomorrow. Not try to anticipate, especially what evil might come upon us, and live today as if this were the last and only day we have. And it is the last and only day you have, isn't it, right now? If I'm pessimistic, the problem lies in the fact that I must face the fact that I am self-centered. And the devil loves that. Just keep looking at yourself. Sister E says from the other side of the room, I'm too busy to do the things we know we ought to do. You've written down your list of physical things to do today, but where's your list of spiritual things to do today? Well, all of us knew what we were going to do spiritually today. We were going to come to class, we're going to listen, we're going to participate. We all knew that, but how about Monday? When you go home, have you got something on your list to do Monday for God? The devil delights in your letting your everyday life fill it up so full that you're too busy or too tired to tend to spiritual things. I love that, don't you? That old easy chair gets you, that old TV draws you, and you get plunked down and only dynamite will get you out of it. The devil loves that when we're too busy. The devil says, keep them busy doing anything so long as you keep them away from the enemy. Keep them away from God. Brother F says, we need to put a lot of thought and give a lot of attention to what's going on in the classroom. For the future's in our kids. And if kids turn against the Bible and can't be turned around, the church is in real trouble. Some public schools have classes teaching that creation is a myth. And as an alternative, the evolutionary theory openly teaching God is a figment of the imagination, like Santa Claus, the Easter Bunny, and the Tooth Fairy. Some of these progressive and enlightened educators are telling students their parents are grossly outdated. The children shouldn't listen to their teachers on many matters. They should ignore their parents. Some people don't believe this is happening in the public schools. And don't we delight in hoodwinking them into thinking that it isn't happening. It is happening, it has happened, and it will always happen, as we brought before your attention the other day. Or if it is happening, there's nothing you can do about it, isn't there? The devil says, well, you can't do anything about it. You're a minority. But I know one woman on the East Coast that got prayers thrown out of the school almost single-handedly. One can't do anything about it? That's the devil talking. Many are so ill-informed they don't know there's a national campaign going on. It'll be much easier if we can work undercover till we deliver them to the prince of the power of the air, this devil says. Sister F says, the devil knows we have weaknesses, but he's willing to concede. He's willing to concede. But little does she know how much I'll concede. How much will the devil concede? Out of 100 points, how much will he concede? 99 9/10? He doesn't have to concede the whole point, does he? 99 9/10, he'll concede. Because that's his mode of operation, isn't it? I'll concede anything to make a sale. I want to win the free trip to Hawaii, and my sales this month are running kind of low. I'm going to give them a special. I'll concede on one point to gain a goal on another. For example, let me give you an example. A congregation I heard about invited a congregation of the Lord's Church to get together for a worship service. The inviting congregation was one with a big, ambitious program for young people. They really have a lot of lively and exciting activities, especially designed for young people. And they've been highly successful in gaining large numbers. Knowing that the Church of Christ did not have instrumental music, and they did, they offered to concede to leave out the instrument for that service, that joint service, in order not to offend their brethren. Concede if they'll come and worship with them. This could be the devil, couldn't it? If he can get them there once, the service is exciting and satisfying. The young people who have been taught will fall for it, hook, line, and sinker. There's no point in losing a single customer. We can afford to yield on almost any point. What makes the difference? We win a few and we lose a few. So long as we win the war. Brother G pops up, that's just plain paranoia. Good for him, I say, don't you? The devil convinced me that so long as I keep from doing wrong, I'm not doing right. Paul conceded that he risked his whole life fighting for Christianity. But we must realize that any attempt to iron out differences carries a risk of loss. But it also carries a possibility of gain. The devil has a way of convincing us that the whole world is big, bad, and ugly. You stay out of it. Don't you do any wrong, and you'll be all right. How many of us feel that way? If I just keep from doing wrong, I'll be all right. Dennis knows the best.